one of the funny bits to allow for the fact that the hero had been born in a handbag. It was the clowns who were giving him trouble again. They kept changing every time he thought about them. He preferred them in twos, that was traditional, but now there seemed to be a third one, and he was blowed if he could think of any funny lines for him. His quill moved scratchily over the latest sheet of paper, trying to catch the voices that had streamed through his dreaming mind and had seemed so funny at the time. His tongue began to stick out of the corner of his mouth. He was sweating. "This is my little study," he wrote. "Hey, with a little study, you could go a long way, and I wish you'd start now. If you can't leave in a cab, then leave in a huff. If that's too soon, then leave in a minute and a half. Say, you got a pencil? A crayon?" Hal stared at this in horror. On the page it looked nonsensical, ridiculous, and yet, in the thronged auditorium of his mind, he dipped the quill in the inkpot and chased the echoes further. "Second clown. That's a right, boss. Third clown. Business with bladder on stick. Honk, honk." Howell gave up. Yes, it was funny. He knew it was funny. He'd heard the laughter in his dreams, but it wasn't right. Not yet. Maybe never. It was like the other idea he had about two clowns, one fat, one thin. "This is a mean, dainty mess you've gotten me into, Stanley." He had laughed until his chest ached, and the rest of the company had looked at him in astonishment, but in his dreams it was hilarious. He laid down the pen and rubbed his eyes. It must be nearly midnight. And the habit of a lifetime told him to spare the candles, although, for a fact, they could afford all the candles they could eat now, whatever Vitola might say. Hour gongs were being struck all across the city, and night watchmen were proclaiming that it was indeed midnight, and also that, in the face of all the evidence, all was well. Many of them got as far as the end of the sentence before being mugged. Howell pushed open the shutters and looked out at Ankh Morpork. It would be tempting to say the Twin City was at its best this time of year, but that wouldn't be entirely correct. It was at its most typical. The River Ankh, the cloaca of half a continent, was already pretty wide and silt-laden when it reached the city's outskirts. By the time it left, it didn't so much flow as exude. Owing to the accretion of the mud of centuries, the bed of the river was in fact higher than some of the low-lying areas, and now, with the snow melt swelling the flow, many of the low-rent districts of the Morpork side were flooded. If you can use that word for a liquid you could pick up in a net. This sort of thing happened every year and would have caused havoc with the drains and the sewage systems, so it is just as well that the city didn't have very many. Its inhabitants merely kept a punt handy in the backyard and periodically built another story on the house. It was reckoned to be very healthy there. Very few germs were able to survive. Howell looked across a sort of misty sea in which buildings clustered like a sandcastle competition at high tide. Flares and lighted windows made pleasing patterns on the iridescent surface. But there was one glare of light, much closer to hand, which particularly occupied his attention. On a patch of slightly higher ground by the river, bought by Vitola for a ruinous sum, a new building was rising. It was growing even by night, like a mushroom. Howell could see the cressets burning all along the scaffolding as the hired craftsmen, and even some of the players themselves, refused to let the mere shade of the sky interrupt their labours. New buildings were rare in Morpork, but this was even a new type of building. The disc. Vitola had been aghast at the idea at first, but young Tom John had kept at him, and everyone knew that once the lad had got the feel of it, he could persuade water to flow uphill.
"But we've always moved around, laddie," said Vitola in the desperate voice of one who knows that at the end of it all he's going to lose the argument. "I can't go around settling down at my time of life."
"It's not doing you any good," said Tom John firmly. "All these cold nights and frosty mornings, you're not getting any younger. We should stay put somewhere and let